You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave, and buckle in, my friends, because we are recording this podcast in the morning at 10 a.m. instead of 10 p.m. So Dave and I are fully awake. None of this 9:30 at night, 11:30 at night stuff when we are fatigued. Today, we are on the tops of our games. Dave, I slept 9 hours last night. I did an hour and 15 minutes on the treadmill. I am stoked and ready to go. I think this could be a three-hour podcast.
Oh, my goodness. I sure hope not. Everyone hopes not. As a Christmas gift to everyone,
that's right.
Let's not make that happen.
Yeah, we have things to do today, but it's nice to be doing it when the sun is out, so that's a good thing.
It's over. It's good.
So far, the Packers with a victory, and that's why we're jolly here. It's the holiday season. The Packers won 5 in a row now. Beat the Vikings at home. Not exactly the kind of game I expected. It was one of those games where the final score was not indicative of how I think the Packers really controlled this game. One thing I wanted to mention, I think you and I are both consumers of podcasts elsewhere. I mean, during the week, I know that I download pretty much every Packers thing that I can get and try to listen to just about everything that's out there. And this past week, I was listening to what they call the Big Show. That's on the Milwaukee station because it's 105.7 in Milwaukee, I guess it is. I think they call themselves The Fan. It's the one with Gary Ellerson and Sparky is on there. I think also Leroy Butler is also a part of that crew.
Yeah. When he's on there, I like that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're actually a pretty good. Rami Malek is the fourth guy, and they're actually pretty good. And I listen to him not just for Packers stuff, but year round pretty much. But one of the things that came up this week, and I think they were missing the point on something. They spent an entire hour of their show talking about the fact that it doesn't really matter if the Packers should win out and make the playoffs. They're not a Super Bowl team anyway. And I don't think there's any disputing that as far as I'm concerned. I don't think the Packers are a Super Bowl team, regardless of how nice they might have looked, you know, this past week against the Vikings. But that's not the point, though. I think the point is that they were able to turn around a 4-6 season, win 5, and, you know, be relevant the entire time. One of our listeners to our podcast corresponded with us and mentioned how great it is that we've had an extended playoff season already. They've had to win pretty much every game since falling to 4-6, and they have. And I think the real story here is that this has been fun, and it's been relevant, and it's been 5 in a row, and a very good chance of, you know, winning the division. And that, to me, was pretty much unthinkable at 4-6. So to be arguing about, well, it doesn't matter because they're not a Super Bowl team, I think that misses the entire point. The point is they've been able to salvage a season and give us really 5 weeks of excitement.
I agree with you. I've come around to your way of thinking on this a little bit because this season is different than other seasons. I mean, this has been a big roller coaster. Started, you know, with huge expectations, then I mean, we got to the point, me included, that I wanted to just toss everyone out. And I was starting to really question if Aaron Rodgers was any good anymore. And then we've come all the way back. So, I mean, it's almost like a movie with kind of the arc of the season, how it's gone. And, you know, if they beat the Lions and lose first round in the playoffs, that will be very disappointing. Or if they lose the Lions, it'll be disappointing.
Sure.
But, yeah, I have to say it was a season that gave me a lot of emotion. I mean, it was really interesting. I mean, in a lot of ways, 2011 was probably one of the least interesting seasons I watched. I remember
I agree.
Regularly falling asleep in the third quarter. They gave up a ton of yards, but we were just so far ahead in offense. Just waiting for the fourth quarter to grind itself out. This season, it was not that way. I remember in 89, too, when they made the playoffs. That was the magic The Magic season, right?
They missed the postseason. They were 10-6.
Right.
I think the Vikings won on the last week of the season to win the tiebreaker, and the Packers missed out.
Yes, it was a Monday night game. They lost, or they beat Cincinnati back when Cincinnati was pretty good.
Right.
And Minnesota took them. And yeah, I remember they showed that highlight of Mikowski and Brian Noble sitting on his couch. Do you remember that? They're all upset.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, those were good times. But you know, that season, I'll never forget that season. I can't remember 1990, or 2002, or maybe I could. But I remember in 89. I'll never remember that one because even though they didn't make the playoffs, so this season certainly is a great story. It's been a lot of fun. I clapped a few times during this game against Minnesota.
Wow, that's really crazy excitement, Dave.
I did, yep. I burst into clapping. Into applause, yes. but, nothing else does that. I don't watch any shows where I just spontaneously start to applaud. And there are a couple plays by Jordy that just made me feel great. But I do want to come back to the idea that they're not a Super Bowl team. Now, I am a severe fan. You're much more kind of, you don't go too high, you don't get too low. I don't think it's completely absurd to think that this team couldn't make it to the Super Bowl. I mean, what team is really, they have one team that is clear and above better, I think, than the rest of the league, and that's Dallas. A second, I guess you'd say, is Seattle, which we destroyed a week ago. And Dallas is two rookies. So what's to say they can't? I mean, they're getting hot at the right time, and we keep comparing this season to 2010. The first point you make, I agree that I think the journey has been fun. But do you think it's really unreasonable to think that they can make the Super Bowl?
Yes, because their defense just is not good enough. And also, too, on the offensive side, late in this game against the Vikings, Brian Bulaga went out and he with an arm injury. And I don't think it's clear that he's going to play this week or if he's going to be available to them. They have been injured this year as much as I think as they were in 2010, but the injuries this year I think were more significant, starting with Sam Shields.
Yeah.
And they really, the Sam Shields injury on defense I think is analogous to the Jordy Nelson injury last year to the offense. I don't think this defense will realize the potential it might have had because that was just a devastating loss. And the guys that they drafted to be their top cornerbacks a year ago, I don't know if it's sophomore slump or maybe they are just not as good as we thought as they were. And I think also there's an injury as far as Demaryius Randall goes. He wasn't walking quite right. I think there's something wrong with him with that groin injury that he had. He had some surgery. I think he came back probably too quickly. There's a variety of things that are wrong with the Packers secondary, and they've also been dinged up in amongst the linebackers. I mean, Clay played tremendous against the Vikings. I mean, that was the Clay Matthews that we expected.
Yeah.
Kind of came out of nowhere because he had been just a shadow of himself for the several weeks following that enormous hit that he took in Philadelphia.
Right.
So I just think, Dave, that they lack too much on defense. They need to be more credible on that side of the ball to, in my mind, think that they could somehow run through the playoffs and make the Super Bowl. Had they had maybe just a healthy Sam Shields. Okay, if everything else is the same, except Sam Shields can play, I think, maybe they are credible. But that loss, I think, is devastating, and I think it's going to limit them. In fact, it may come and haunt them this Sunday. I mean, Matthew Stafford having a great season. He's always been a solid quarterback. He has a beautiful wife, I think, as we both determined. And I think that this is going to be a real problem for the Packers. I think he's going to have an enormous game. I guess it's actually the late game now. It's been flexed to Sunday night.
Right.
And the good news for the Packers is they will know at that time what they have to do based on what has preceded them. It's possible that they could lose that game and still, make the playoffs, but they will have a very clear idea. I just think that Stafford and that offense is not a good matchup for this limited Packer defense, and that's why I don't think that they're a Super Bowl team.
I mean, I agree. I wouldn't say it's probable, but it's not impossible because this game is a clear indication of how the league works, is you need to have a good offense, and your defense can just be okay or get a couple of turnovers or get lucky and a guy drops a third down pass and you get the ball back. All of a sudden, you're up by 14, and the game changes completely. I mean, you look at this game. if you wouldn't know the score and saw on offense that Sam Bradford, who really is not very good, and the Vikings have leveraged their future to get this guy that's very ordinary. He might have been better than what they had, but I think they really went for broke on a team that didn't finish very well. But he threw for 382 yards, had 110 passer rating. Is that I can't always
110.6?
110.6. Rushing wasn't great. They rushed for almost 100 yards. They had one guy that had over 200 yards receiving.
Who is this Thielen guy anyway?
I don't know. He was
great.
Jordy Light.
If he's a free agent,
he'd look great in a Packer uniform. Very much like a Jordy. But, you know, their offense just went up and down the field, and yet we won by 13 points. And it's because when the offense is as good as the Packers have been playing, all you need is a couple of stops. Your defense doesn't have to be the Ravens or the, you know, back in the day, or Steelers or Seattle or anyone. It just have to be good enough to get a couple of stops and maybe a turnover or two. I mean, look what happened in this game. The center doesn't hike the ball right, and Kenny Clark gets it. We score no touchdown. You know, that can happen in a playoff situation. So that's why I think the Packers were so flawed last year. Their defense was better, but their offense was terrible. And that I don't think you can kind of – I mean, your defense have to be special to carry you far if your offense isn't very good. But if you can score and score and score and score – and I tell you, I don't know what turned this thing around, but somehow the Packers look like the Packers of a few years ago. They look really good on offense. And I thought, I wanted to ask you this. I actually sent a question to Jason Wilde, but he didn't respond back to me. But, you know,
bastard.
I know. But I wanted to know someone who can watches the game, you know, game after game from the perspective of hopefully being there. Have defenses now changed? Have they had to come out of that man-to-man, you know, kind of play our offense deep and really cover the receiver as well to a zone now because of Ty Montgomery and other ways they've run the offense? Because I thought watching them play Minnesota and watching Nelson kind of get open in a zone, that no one played that defense against us last year or early this year. So defenses either have gotten stupid or I don't even think Minnesota played us in early in the season. I think the Packers have made defenses adjust, and now we're kind of back to normal. Do you have a sense for that at all? I mean, didn't you notice, like, there's a lot of zone that they're playing against the Packers?
Yes, I did, in fact, notice that. And I also noticed that Minnesota played, I thought, a really good zone. It wasn't, you know, gaping holes like you see the Packers playing zone.
Yeah.
You know, it was a fairly tight zone, but Aaron Rodgers was very accurate.
Fit it in there. That's right.
Exactly right. You know, now is this because of what they've been able to do with Ty Montgomery? I mean, that's a possibility. But what strikes me in all this, Dave, is, you know, how accidental this whole thing really was. Let's say for a minute, let's take your premise and say, yes, it's because of Ty Montgomery playing him in the backfield. Other teams have had to adjust. They're not playing, you know, the tight man coverage where the guys aren't open right away. So they've adjusted. They're not playing zone. The whole decision to go with Montgomery was because they had nobody else, really.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like they sat down and said, you know, if we do this, this is going to happen. And they essentially have scrapped what they wanted to do this season. And that was be that, you know, hurry up offense where other teams can't substitute. And, you know, they've gone totally 180 from really what they've wanted to do. They found a solution, and I will give enormous credit to, you know, the coaching staff. But I think that the success is kind of accidental. I mean, this is sort of like these discoveries that we hear about in science. You know, they were looking for something else, and, you know, they found this enormous breakthrough in a different area. This is what this feels like, that the Packers sort of stumbled onto this, and it's worked out enormously well. But it's been because of necessity. It's not because they had some kind of design. They were looking for anything that would help, and it's wound up, I think, surpassing anybody's wildest expectations, to the point where the quarterback, after the game, is talking about kind of this zen experience that he had. He was just in this zone, in the flow, and, you know, he was oblivious to stuff. And what was that about?
Yeah, I mean, everything slowed down for him, yeah.
Was he in a Mason Crosby stash? I mean, it was really – I was like, I was reading this and thinking, dude, I mean, wow, this isn't really NFL stuff you're doing here. So whatever it is, they found it, and teams haven't yet adjusted. Now, this is the NFL, and teams do adjust, and they will adjust, and whatever has worked for you for the last five games won't necessarily work for you the next, you know, five games or the next five quarters, because teams find a way to counter it, and you have to counter back. But this has worked for whatever reason, and it's put together one of the most exciting runs that we have, or that I've had as a Packer fan. I'm trying to think the last time I was excited about a run like, well, it's probably that Super Bowl season, you know, when they were able to turn that season around despite the injuries and just keep on winning. And that was a real gift. And so it's been a long time since something like this happened.
The relaxed season, I thought, was pretty good too. I mean,
that was a slow start. Yeah, those slow, yeah, yeah.
Slow start. We were getting kind of antsy, and they came back, had a really good season. That should have been a Super Bowl season, which is just a shame. But I guess in your premise, if Eddie Lacy had stayed healthy and was playing as well as he had been playing, which was pretty good, the offense overall probably wouldn't be as good.
Exactly, and that's weird, isn't it? It's really weird to think of that. Not for Eddie Lacy, it wasn't probably a good thing, but I think for the Packers, it was probably a good thing because it forced them to do something different, because teams maybe had kind of figured out what is they wanted to do. And, you know, we have been saying for a long time, and counter to what you hear a lot of places, Packers don't commit to the running game. Well, yeah, in my opinion, they ran the ball too much, and that was why they were having difficulties. And by getting Lacy off the field, and this isn't to rip Eddie Lacy. I mean, I think he's a good back, and he had a couple of good years for Green Bay. Seems like a really good guy. But I just don't think that style of offense was working for them, and his injury probably has allowed them to win these past five games because they had to adjust and do something that other teams hadn't figured out.
Yeah, I wonder if defenses will go back to it, because I thought this was a game where Ty did not look as good as a running back to me. I mean, he had a 2.6 average, which isn't terrible.
But a long gain of 6 yards, though, Dave.
That's, well, what? You're saying that's, you're proving my point for me?
It's sarcasm, Dave.
Yeah, it's
Come on. Too
early for sarcasm.
It's obviously, it's before noon. So
I have not been running on my treadmill for an hour and a half. But, you know, I don't think he was very successful. I actually like Christian Michael better, but he had a 1 yard average in his running.
But again, a long of six, though.
But he had a long six. You're right. Well, you keep proving me wrong on every point I make. But Ty, you know, he carried nine times, but he only threw to him four times. So I wonder if teams will go back to that defense, because although Ty Montgomery gives you that threat, they're not using him a ton. It's almost like he's there and he's available. You have to be careful for it, but they're not exhausting him. And did you notice? I don't know if they really didn't talk about on the broadcast. I didn't hear on the shows, but I think there was a play where they were going to throw a screen to Ty Montgomery, and Rodgers got sacked. Do you know what play I'm talking about? It was almost like a screen up the middle of the field, but and Ty sort of pushed his guy, but then quickly went to the screen, and that's the guy. I think it was Kendricks.
Who had a great game. Yeah, that guy had a great game.
Yeah, and tackled Rodgers, and then Rodgers was hot about it. And then they kept kind of showing – they showed a scene where there was Montgomery, Rodgers, and McCarthy were talking. And it looked like Rodgers was giving Ty Montgomery the business. And then later on, they showed Ty Montgomery and Christian Michael talking. And I just wondered if that whole scene had played out, if I'm just making this up. But it looked like Aaron Rodgers really gave Ty Montgomery a piece of his mind. And it just made me think that Aaron Rodgers must be a really tough guy to play for. If you don't do it perfectly, he's going to let you have it. Did you notice any of that at all? I wish I had a montage of the scenes that I thought I saw at the game, but I thought there was something going on there where Rodgers really let him have it. Any of that?
I think, Dave, that probably is the case, but I think that happens after pretty much any play where it's a disaster or the quarterback gets hit. I think they go to the sidelines, and I know the quarterbacks don't like getting hit, and if they can point the finger at somebody else. Now, this was something that was brought up on Jason Wilde's podcast with Mark Tauscher. It's the interpretation that we have of those events that's so interesting. When a guy is going good, like Rodgers is right now, he's a fiery leader.
Yeah.
You know, if things are going bad, he's a whining, complaining brat.
Right.
You know, it's just how the interpretation of all that stuff goes. My bet is that it wasn't just the Montgomery thing. I bet you there is stuff on the sidelines that's an emotionally charged environment. And I have to believe that this is going on all the time with those guys. They got their, you know, stupid Microsoft Surfaces, I guess, because they can't afford iPads. and you know, they're looking at this stuff and they're reacting to it, and the coaches get together and there's guys yelling and swearing and everything else because, you know, they want to win. They have their own physical well-being to worry about. There's money on the line. I let's face it, the entire week's worth of work comes down to that 3 hours. I mean, that's really, it's emotionally charged because everything is riding on that. You do it 16 times, and so everything, I think, it's magnified. And I would imagine that's probably what happened. And I would also bet, Dave, that there was a degree of frustration because Ty Montgomery did not have the kind of game he had the week before. I'm guessing that Zimmer and the Vikings probably game planned, you know, to take a lot of the Montgomery stuff away, and that was probably frustrating for the Packers. You know, Montgomery targeted 5 times as a receiver, 4 catches, only 17 yards, and then 23. So he had 40 yards of total offense and only touched the ball, 13 times. And I would guess that probably wasn't what they wanted to do, because this seems to be the way they want to run the offense now. And so they had to find something else. Luckily, they did. But that was probably also frustrating that they couldn't do what they hoped to do because the Vikings had taken it away.
Yeah. You know, someone else made a good point, too. We think of the Ty Montgomery as being the turning point for the offense. And someone said, was it that or was it putting Jordy Nelson in the slot? And I thought that's a really good point, because when he was running up and down the sidelines, you had the deep throw, which he was never open on, and you had the back shoulder throw, which was, you know, 50-50 maybe, but then there was nothing else. And now it seems like you've really opened up the offense. He's doing a lot more. He's a sure-handed third down guy for you. He caught, which, I mean, I almost passed out when I saw on a 3rd and 2, he threw to Jordy for like a 3-yard first down. Like, that never happens. I wonder how much you think that him playing in the slot was a real game changer. And I wonder when that happened. I don't know if, like, I guess I don't follow it that closely to see, oh, yeah, he's in the slot again. He's in the slot again. Because he plays on the outside some, I think, right?
Well, he plays on the outside most of the time. He was in the slot this week because Randall Cobb was hurt. And as they like to say in the NFL, Dave, he had an ankle. In fact, I think he's got 2. But that's just me. Huh. Anyway.
Okay. So he hasn't been playing the slot at all except for this game?
No. I think he has some. But Randall Cobb is their slot guy. I mean, at 5'10", I mean, and then 190 pounds, he's a guy that you know, tends to play inside and not the outside positions. He wasn't available this week because of his injury. And so Nelson played there, and people were talking after the game, and this made some sense to me. If they found something, I mean, if this is where Jordy Nelson can be Jordy Nelson by playing from the slot, well, maybe, you know, they don't need Randall Cobb and his big salary next season. And that would be quite interesting if they assess things and they were looking maybe to add something on defense or look to re-sign. You know, they got a couple of offensive linemen who are coming up for free agency. And if money is going to be an issue, I wonder if they wouldn't let Randall Cobb go and let Jordy play from the slot, because he was certainly effective or maybe even more effective from that position than he was playing outside.
Yeah. I think they're going to need Cobb if they're going to go anywhere. Although if he's injured the rest of the way, then I don't know if we need an injured Cobb. We need 100% Cobb. I still like him as a player very, very much. To me, Davante Adams is a guy. I mean, he's had a great year. He had a great game. He's had a couple of great games. But, man, I don't want a guy that's going to be great and then awful. I mean, that was Jermichael Finley, right? There were just some plays, some catches he made that were amazing, and then he dropped easy stuff. Do you think Adams is just always going to be that guy? I think they were talking on either the radio or on the podcast, you know, that people just get down on him, and it's not fair. You know, he's a great player. I'm one of those guys that's down on him. Even when he has a good game, I don't like it. I don't like the inconsistency in a wide receiver. And he had a couple drops again this week.
Yes, I mean, and that frustrates the hell out of me. But Jordy did too. I mean, both Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams had drops this week. Now, of course, in Devontae's case, it was in the end zone for a touchdown. In Jordy's case, it was for a first down. But Jordy, you know, had 154 yards receiving and 9 receptions, and Adams, you know, only had the 4 catches. Here's what I think about Davante Adams. A lot of people have made this point in the past. It's not a especially fresh take. But he really is, in lots of ways, James Jones. And if you recall, James Jones's first couple seasons, he had difficulties hanging onto the ball. In fact, I believe he dropped a sure touchdown in the Super Bowl. He was open and a slant. It hit him, you know, right in the hands, and nothing but, you know, green field in front of him, and it didn't happen.
That's right.
Now, after that, though, the following season in 2011, I mean, the guy caught everything, and I believe that would have been his maybe third or fourth season. So Adams seems to be on that same kind of track where he's showing promise, showing potential. He drops several touchdowns this year, but I kind of think he's on the cusp of being. Now, not that James Jones was an all-pro, but he was a really, really solid, dependable guy. And I think Adams is on that same kind of track. Now, my son, who follows the Packers very, very closely, he is a big Davante Adams guy. So I might be a little bit influenced by those opinions. But he's shown enough promise this season, and I mean Adams here, not my son, to give me reason to believe that he's going to be better next year and he's going to be a more dependable target. I don't think this is necessarily his profile forever going forward. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying the Packers should cut Cobb, because of his big salary. It does raise that question. If you can suddenly look ahead and say, you know, if we have a running back, maybe we don't need Ty Montgomery in the backfield. Maybe we play Montgomery from the slot. You can play Jordy from the slot. Do you need a third guy that can do that? You know, maybe you draft somebody to play, you know, one of the kind of the wide receiver outside the numbers kind of guys, and you really don't need to have that, and you can save the money, and you can sign Lang and Treader and, you know, guys who are coming up for free agency. So that's why I kind of put it into the mix. I hear what you're saying about Adams, but I see a guy whose arrow is pointed up.
Yeah, I feel like he's hit his peak, and maybe he can be more dependable, but then he slows down. James Jones was a very reliable third or fourth receiver, so maybe that's what he can become. I don't know if he's going to be a great two, and if Cobb is healthy, then as a three, I suppose, you know, he does flash some very, very good plays, and he's had some very, very good games. So, I mean, he's going to have to be more consistent. If we're talking about a successful postseason run of beating the Lions and doing something, I think Adams has got to grow up. You know, I don't know what his deal is in dropping these balls. If that's not paying attention, is it in his head? You know, he needs to put his big boy pants on and play. And he just has to look at Jordy and do what he does. Because, man, Jordy had a game and a half. If it wasn't for Adam Thielen outshining him, I mean, Jordy Nelson had just a tremendous game. I do think, and what makes me a little nervous, is I think there are plays where Rodgers looks for him almost exclusively, and a lot of times on third down. And I don't like that. I don't like that, you know, he's limiting himself on one side of the field and just, I mean, if you're going to pick a guy, I guess I'd pick Jordy, but, you know, I think sometimes there are guys open the other side of the field and he's locking in. Do you find that to be a problem? They don't talk about it much on the broadcast, and you don't see the field, but I think there have been a few times where I feel he really locks in on him.
Well, I don't deny that. I have a difficulty saying by watching on television that, you know, he is following Jordy Nelson down the field. Part of that could be that Nelson's the number one option on a particular play call.
Yeah,
I mean, when he does his progressions, if he's the number one guy or number two guy even, you're going to be looking in that direction more so than you're going to be trying to find, I don't know, Geronimo Allison, you know, because he likely is a lower option. And it may be also a reason why when Nelson wasn't there, he's probably the first or second option on most of the plays. When he's not there, that does really screw things up. And that just, you know, you have to hope that A, that Nelson doesn't get injured and that he'll play a long time, because it seems like Aaron Rodgers is pretty much lost without him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they have a chemistry. They've got, 59 touchdown passes between them. It's a Packer record. So obviously there's something between those guys. I mean, they know what they want to do. And he had two touchdowns again this week. It's something special. There's no doubt about it. But when you remove that from the equation, I mean, Jordy Nelson is a human being who got hurt. We saw that last year. It could happen again. And you hate to think that that's going to derail the offense, but it's hard not to think that when you can see what a difference it makes when he is in the game and is available. The offense just hums so much better. So you have to hope that, you know, his other knee doesn't go, or something else doesn't happen to him. He's had a hip injury in the past. You have to hope that that doesn't crop up again and limit him, because it's fatal to the Packer offense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. But right now he's playing really well, and it looks like whatever injury he was recovering from, he feels, if he's not 100% back, he's close. And he's definitely comeback player of the year, right? I'm not following other teams. I don't know who it would be, but
there was one other guy, and I can't think of his name. He's having a really big season someplace else too, who could be a competitor. But I think after this game, which I think was a national TV game, I have to believe that Jordy probably, you know, locked that down with his performance this past Saturday.
And hey, what do you think about this whole deal, the Vikings changing their strategy of playing defense against Jordy and going against their coach?
Yeah, I saw that, and an insurrection.
Yeah.
Not that it doesn't happen in the NFL. I mean, maybe it does, but it's not ever exposed this way. And the question that was raised by one of the reporters was, obviously the coach knew this, right? I mean, Zimmer, they met all week long and they said they're going to do it a certain way and wasn't being done. You would think that, you know, after the second time it happened, he would have called everybody over on the sideline and said, what the hell's going on here?
Right.
But apparently they changed it at halftime or something, but he let it go for a while. And maybe he was just, you know, dumbfounded as to why is this happening this way? But apparently the defensive backs decided that they knew better than the head coach. And you have to really think that there's going to be changes made in terms of personnel. I know that you're a manager at the place that you work, and if you give specific instructions and people don't do that, I don't think those employees are going to be around that long. And I think that's probably true in the NFL too. I mean, I've not read anything like that before. It was amazing to me that there'd be that kind of insurrection.
Yeah, I guess I can't understand. I see it. I understand why they did it in a way. But to have it happen and then have it to go on for a full half, I got the sense.
Yeah,
that,
crazy.
Yeah, you know, that finally at halftime they went back to their strategy, and I guess Jordy had a much poorer second half than the first half.
Two catches for 9 yards, I think, in the second half. Yeah.
So, but why would the coach not stop it? You know, call a timeout, call his guys, you know, talk to his defensive coordinator, shift a guy, you know, subs a guy out. I mean, just to let it go? It seems like you've lost your team when that has happened. I've never heard that before. And I would think even in a losing season and a team that is going down, you've got to preserve your leadership for, you know, next year. I would put my foot down. And maybe they did. They would just figure they'd wait till halftime. Maybe. But I found the whole thing really puzzling. And especially, it'd been one thing if it had worked, and then you could say, you know, the coach is an idiot, but it doesn't seem like the players' instincts were correct.
Boy, yeah, it's really remarkable that not just that it happened, but that it became public and public so quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Zimmer's a highly regarded coach, I mean, as a defensive mind especially, and that's the side of the ball that decided to take it into their own hands. Now, I know they've had a rough season over there. I mean, they lost their quarterback in the preseason, Adrian Peterson, the clock struck 12 on him finally, and they've had to scramble. They, you know, bringing in Sam Bradford was a kind of a desperation move. They got off the great start,
yeah,
and then it collapsed.
Yeah,
and yeah, collapsed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the whole thing. So maybe this, you know, is just kind of a byproduct of that whole thing. But You have to wonder, and maybe contrast the two situations, right? at no time when the Packers were losing four games in a row and falling to 4-6, do I recall stories of this kind of rebellion going on in the Packer locker room. Now, I know people weren't happy, but they got behind their coach and they've turned it around. And you wonder what the difference is. Is it personalities that are different over in Minnesota or other kinds of circumstances that from a distance we really can't judge? But it's really interesting to see how Minnesota apparently and its players have responded to adversity and how the Packers did responding to their own adversity.
Yeah, that's a good point. It really is the opposite seasons where they had a great start. They went 5-0. It's one of the few 5-0 not to make the playoffs. And they've really collapsed at the end. I don't know if I'll ever give it up for Ted Thompson, but Mike McCarthy, I think you have to – I need to say, look, I may be off on McCarthy, and him being able to sort of bring this team back is pretty remarkable. I do think he takes a very long time to adjust.
Yes.
But most coaches do, and I guess I don't have appreciation of what a big of a machine, you know, running a pro football team is, and just switching your offense that maybe you've been planning for 5 months, you know, in the offseason or something. You just can't do that. And we look at New England as an example where I think that they're very good at that. But, you know, I can't tell. But I see the results and the fact that they've come back. He hasn't lost his team. It seems like players, including Rodgers, is standing up for McCarthy now. You know, this is a proud team. They're made up – I guess this is what's good for Ted Thompson. It seems like they're made up of people who are professionals. There's not a lot of jerks on this team. I mean, did you hear Geronimo Allison in his interview?
I did not hear his interview. I have read his tweets. Which I, you know, I mean, I'm a 57-year-old man and father of two. I've been around the world. It made me blush. I mean, Wow, dude. I mean, yikes. So what was his interview like? Was there a lot of bleeping that was going on, or what was the deal there?
No. Wait, Geronimo Allison?
Yeah. I mean, this guy is like the porn champion on his Twitter account. Now, a lot of those things I know were taken from his college days. So maybe he's changed or his agents told him to grow up. But it's like, wow. I mean, that's raw.
Oh.
You usually have to, you know, get a pay-per-view to watch that.
Well, I am coming from the exact opposite perspective. This guy talks about –
Is he now a Christian that would be welcomed at Wheaton College?
He made – Russell Wilson seem like
– Oh, you are kidding me.
Atheist.
Really?
Yes. It was one – I mean, I'm all for it. As a Wheaton College grad, I am all for it. I love it. But, I mean, it was the Lord this, the Lord that, you know, how did –
Sure, it was the Lord God and not the Lord Satan. I mean, because this is – go back and read the guy's Twitter account. I mean, he had a big game a month or so ago, and somebody went and found this string of stuff, and it's like – Wow. You know, I think Hugh Hefner was, you know, blushing when he read this stuff.
I'll have to look back. No, unless I'm pretty sure it was Geronimo Allison. Was it somebody else? I mean, it was all about in God's timing and, you know, they talked a little bit about, are you glad you're on the practice squad? So you got to, you know, get used to the offense and you got your time, you know, later. It all happened in God's timing. I'm not going to question that. It was,
Well, human beings are.
I don't know what point I'm making anymore because I thought he was a good guy.
Human beings are dynamic. Well, he probably is, but human beings are dynamic, right? I mean, people grow and people change over time, and that goes both sides of the spectrum. I mean, maybe they went to Wheaton College, but you know they got off track later on in their life, and you know, yourself.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Okay. I'm just using as an example.
Okay. So, okay. All right.
But it can go the other way as well. And I actually, speaking of human nature and Mike McCarthy, and coaches in general, if you believe in something, and not to turn this to the 700 Club, but okay, if you believe in something passionately, like you know, it could be your faith, or it could be your offensive scheme as a head coach, or as an offensive coordinator, and you really think this is going to work, right? I mean, you have invested time, maybe not just in that off season, but maybe your entire professional life from the time you became a quality control assistant and you learned from, I don't know, Mike Holmgren or whoever it might have been, great offensive minds, John Gruden, you've been schooled in this, you believe it, you become an offensive coordinator or head coach, and this is your system, right? You believe in it. And you're not going to get off of that very quickly. And yeah, McCarthy probably is slow to adjust, but it's probably more a reflection of the fact that he has bought into something, that he believes in something, and he's not going to just, you know, toss it out the window. Oh, I guess that's not going to work. I'm going to change now. If this is an article of faith for you, that you have invested all this time and you know it inside and out, I can see where that would be real difficult to just to say, you know, to crumple up that piece of paper and try something new, which is why it was lucky for the Packers, I think, that Lacy got hurt. And out of necessity, they had to change and come up with something new, because if they didn't, I think McCarthy, because of his belief system, would have probably stayed with what he believed to be the true, unadulterated article of faith in his offense. So this was probably lucky that he had to be practical.
Yeah. Well, so in your interpretation, McCarthy is not as good a coach as he appears, because he lucked into a good offense. Rather, if he had all his guys, he might have been running the same old thing he was running at the end of last year, which wasn't successful.
I don't disagree with your general idea that he only came off of this because he had to. But does that make him a bad coach? I think this is the way most coaches are. I mean, it's I think he's effective, more effective than most of what's out there. I think most of these guys are wired the same way. So I think when you compare him to other NFL coaches, I think he's one of the better ones. You know, top five, maybe, you know, certainly top, 15% in the league, top 10% in the league, probably something like that. So I still think he's a really good coach, but I also think that he's human. And he doesn't come off his particular investment strategy because he believes in it. Okay,
you're getting way too personal.
The committee has studied these things. We have set our benchmarks.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do, and then things change, and you have to change with it.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, give him a lot of props. Whether they beat Detroit or not, they have salvaged this season that I did not think was salvageable. Rodgers has come back. In a way that I didn't think he'd be back from it. You know, MVP, I did not see this. And I think because of that stretch, I don't think he'll win the MVP.
Right, right.
Unless there's a co-MVP possibly. But I bet you Matt Ryan, he's had a pretty consistent season.
Correct.
But goodness, when you bring in Brett Hundley, you can certainly see why Aaron Rodgers is the MVP. I thought Brett Hundley was going to be a real star and a great backup. Boy, he does not look good to me. But
well, is it because of the length of his neck? I mean, there's something wrong with this. This is like there are giraffes on the savannah in Africa that are saying, dude, your neck is long.
Oh, and you see how Rodgers photobombs all the captain's pictures?
Right, see? Right.
I guess Brett Hundley does that now too, because I saw in the last one. Are you getting calls? Are we getting call phone-ins?
Yeah, I think there are people. Yeah, they want to speak to us, and I'm sorry, my agent says I don't have to take calls.
Well, on that note, should we take a break?
Yeah, my clothes are done, and I have to move them from the washer to the dryer.
All right, do that.
So yeah,
one
so
of the many
I think
things we do on the break. Yeah.
Yeah, and also I'm about halfway done with my iced tea, so I am going to refill my glass. I'm going to move those clothes from the washer to the dryer. I'm going to see why my dad was calling, and we're going to be back with more Packers Therapy in just a second. Back with more Packers Therapy. Back with more Chris and Dave. Still morning. It's only 11 o'clock in the morning. That's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
We were going to talk a little bit about the Packers defense. I think we did a little bit in the first part of this podcast. The defense got its problems. Clay Matthews, he has done a Lazarus kind of situation. He's risen from the dead. I think he's all wrapped up pretty much like Lazarus was too, as I recall. And he looked better. He looked good. I think that's about all we need to really say there. I mean, the guy played like Clay Matthews, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a good thing.
Look, if you have a guy that makes plays on third downs, and that's all they do, that's a valuable player to have. Knock two passes down. Which I think were both third down plays. I mean, the strip sack that he had, that was the change of the game right there. I think that's it felt like our offense was playing really well, but we just couldn't close them out. And that strip sack that he had I thought that put the game away or made it very difficult for Minnesota to come back. That's what you need, you know, and it's really all you need from a couple of these guys is just a player to a game on defense and let your offense carry you. But they absolutely need him to be a guy that plays with his hair on fire kind of a guy. And it was a great sign to see him playing like that. If he's healthy against Detroit, you know, I like our chances.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the guy that they have to count on. Maybe they get a little from Julius Peppers. I know there were two sacks, you know, from Nick Perry, but Nick Perry with that club.
Yeah.
Although it was funny at the end of the game when he made the sack and he's petting his club. Did you see that at the end of the game? Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty funny. But I don't think we can really count on that being a regular thing from him. I give him big props. I know it's a contract year for him, so he's out there playing. But really, it's Clay Matthews. If Clay Matthews can play like he did, and he made, what, four, five really important kind of field-tilting plays, if they get that from him, you know, they have a chance against that Detroit offense. Otherwise, I just really don't see how they're going to be able to stop the Lions offense. But even if they lose, Packers do have a chance of making the postseason. Now, the easiest way, of course, beat the Lions. Then you're in. If they don't, then they still have a chance, but it's going to require the Redskins to lose. Redskins right now are at 9-5-1. They have a tie in there. Or I'm sorry, 8-6-1 at this point.
Right.
And they have a tie. And they also beat the Packers head-to-head. So they will beat the Packers on any tiebreaker. The Buccaneers also have a chance. But here's the deal with them. If for some reason the Packers lose, the Buccaneers win, they all have the same record. But there is – let me count these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are 9 things that have to happen for Tampa Bay to reach the playoffs if they win – and the Packers lose. There are 8 other things beyond the Packers' loss. The chances of Tampa Bay satisfying all of these conditions is calculated at 60,000 to 1. And it says the chance of it happening is 0.0016%. So I feel pretty good that if somehow Washington loses, Packers lose, Tampa Bay wins, I think the Packers still get in even with that loss against Detroit.
Yeah.
At least that's how it looks right now. The Detroit game tonight against Dallas is pretty much irrelevant. You know, the Cowboys are in. They secured home field advantage. I think they might be throughout the entire playoffs, right? I mean, I think they've they have the home field advantage throughout the playoffs because they got 12 wins. So they have nothing really to play for. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Lions win. But it doesn't matter if the Packers beat them next week. The Packers still get in. Tonight's game, I'm not even going to bother watching it. Although I'd like to see the Lions lose, and I don't know, maybe an injury for Matthew Stafford, you know?
Yeah, that would be – I mean, do the Lions have anything to play for either? Because if they lose, it still comes down to week 16, or do they win and then win next week, they get a better seed. So they have something to play for, because Dallas really doesn't, except they have 2 rookies that they can't sit down 2 weeks in a row and then have a third week as a bye. I just think they have to keep playing and keep those guys, you know, head in the game. They could rest some people. I don't think it's – but I'm curious on Detroit. How does Detroit play this game?
Well, I haven't listened to Lions Therapy yet to really get that particular Detroit perspective.
Can you imagine how awful that would be?
But
that would have to come with medication.
I have got, yes, I think they get the right scripts on Lions Therapy. But I give the Lions, I turned around on the Lions fans. It wasn't this year's game, but last year when we were with Dr. Klaus and we went to the Lions Packers game, those fans, and there weren't a lot of them, but there were enough of them that made the trip over, and they were so into their pathetic team. And you know, if there's one nice thing about this is I've watched the Lions season, I think of those people we saw last year at the game, and I'm glad for them. I mean, these are, you know, there's no reason to be a Lions fan. The Packers were down for a while. The Lions have been down forever. I mean, the last NFL championship they won was 1957. I wasn't even born in 1957. Yeah. And so I give those people just a hell of a lot of credit. Now, not so much that I want them to, you know, win next, Sunday night against the Packers. But if it comes to that, you know, I will think of those people we saw a year ago at Lambeau Field that wore their Lions gear, that cheered for their team, that made the trip. Good for them. You know, I will give them that much credit. I think they do have something to play for, Dave, as I look at the standings. The Falcons are 10-5. And the Lions are 9-5 right now. So if they win tonight, they're tied with the Falcons. This would be for the second seed. Then beating the Packers is important to them because they would have a chance of being the second seed if the Falcons don't win their game this week coming up. So, you know, they still have something to play for. And so I think they're gonna bring their A game against the Cowboys tonight. And that's why I'm hoping not anything serious for Matthew Stafford. Just, I don't know, a hamstring pull or, you know, something that's going to limit him in the game. That's all I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, he hurt his hand last week, right? Or was it his shoulder or hand? Or
It was his hand, but not enough.
Yeah,
It needs to be more significant.
Completely trampled.
Oh, now, exactly. Well, he wasn't completely injured. I understand his wife's in the family way, so apparently some things are working pretty good for Matthew Stafford at this point. Do you know that he and I share a unique bond? Yeah. No. I mean, it's nothing to do with Kelly, but we had the same shoulder surgery.
Oh.
And yeah.
How's your shoulder in throwing a football these days?
You know, after I had the surgery, because it was this. And, of course, God intervened and the internet went down and Skype is going to prevent that story from its conclusion. I guess we're not going to hear about how I balled up those socks and was going to throw it across the room and I had excruciating pain. So I guess that story is going to be lost to history.
I mean, that story was so amazing, too. I laughed and I cried at one point.
That's true. I think what you meant to say is cool story, bro.
Oh, it was awesome. It's too bad it got dropped. Oh, that was so great. So great.
Well, the only thing that we can do is do the betting lines. I mean, because we want to do that before the internet drops again. So
all right,
let's get to the betting lines.
That'll teach us to do a podcast in the morning.
Exactly.
All right, so let's see, we had roughly about 20 people play this week.
20 people, that's
we
crazy.
A definite one single winner this week. So let's go to the stats here as I pull them up. Boy, I'm all discombobulated right now. Internet
really
is down. It's I'll just go off of this. All right. So the first one was how many rushing yards will Ty Montgomery get?
Ooh.
You set the line at 56. He had 23. So he had the under. I had 2 the over.
I was gonna say, so I don't feel as bad about it knowing that you thought it would be more than that.
Yeah, I did. I was wrong on that one. Number two, how many yards will Adrian Peterson have? At rushing yards.
This one's easy. Yeah.
You set the line at 7.5. Apparently, he had 0. Most people took the under on that one. I think every single person took the under on that one. So,
well, then they all won because it was 0. Now, do you really think his career's done? They owe him $18 million next year. I can't see them bringing him back. Maybe somebody else takes a chance on him, but he seems to be spent.
Well, would you rather take a chance on Eddie Lacy or Adrian Peterson for a year?
I would take a chance on Lacy because he knows the system. I like this idea of Ty Montgomery, Kristen Michael, and Eddie Lacy's being, you know, your three backs.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it too. I think someone will take a chance on Adrian. Number three, how many total yards will Randall Cobb have? We have a really good run here.
Oh, man.
You set the line at 61. I said the over. In fact, Randall Cobb, I think, was he my player of the game last week?
I'm going to say, to help you, I'm going to say no, you would never do a thing like that.
Or was that you? One of us did. One of us said Cobb, one of us said Cook.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'll come back
to
that one.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad. But he was inactive, and I didn't really realize his ankle was that bad.
Yeah, we knew that he was he did nothing the week before, and this must have been why. And then we attacked Clay Matthews, number four. We thought, how many total tackles will Clay Matthews have? You set the line at 1.5. That one I got correct. Although, wait, Mike's got tackles for.
And when you say Mike, you mean Mitno Miller, of course.
Mitno Miller, yes. He has one and the under one. I have Clay Matthews as having, let's see, 3 tackles. So there might be a dispute with, yes. But Mike, as we said, Mike is the final authority. If Mike said he had 1 tackle, he had 1 tackle.
The final arbiter. But, you know, even if he had just 1 tackle, his impact was, you know, I mean, without Clay Matthews, I think they may well lose that game.
I think he had 1 is because Clay had 1 solo tackle.
Right.
I have on the chart is 3, so he must have chipped in on half a tackle.
Well, it's got to be at least 1 because he had the sack, right?
And, that's right.
The strip sack, so that has to be at least that. But the guy's knocking passes down. I mean, he's being disruptive. There was one time where he was held, and that negated a big play. I mean, the guy was a beast. He really made a difference, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. Number 5, this one we had correct. In fact, they flashed this on the screen as we had asked.
We were correct? I missed this. They said Packers therapy was correct. I missed it.
Yeah, they did. No, they didn't actually work that specific. But I had said, how many passing plays will Minnesota have that is equal or greater to 20 yards? And they actually showed on the screen how many 20-yard-plus plays they had for Green Bay and Minnesota. You said 4.5. They had 3 or 4. Let's see. Mike is saying both are under. 3 or 4. I thought Thielen would have had 3 or 4 just by himself, but
he had 202 yards. So you'd like to. He had, of course, the 71 yard.
Yep.
And Rudolph had 21 was his long. McKinnon had a 20. What about running? Nobody had any long. So that's 3 right there. But we have to look back at what Thielen's catches were.
Yeah. Again, Mike is always right. So
he is the arbiter of these things.
We're
absolutely.
Say the under is correct.
All right then.
He's saying 3 or 4.
Mitno Miller rules, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Number 6. How many carries for Aaron Rodgers as a runner? And another one we sort of had as a good theme because that one thing we didn't mention was his great run for a touchdown.
Well, when he put the little shimmy on that guy,
pretty good.
I think that was Xavier Rhodes, right? That he just, I mean, what was this? I mean, this was not a guy with a bad hammy and a bad calf muscle. He just shimmied and dove in the end zone. He looked great.
So you set the line at 2.5. He actually ran for 2, so the under had that one. But
good line, nice job.
It wasn't yards; it was attempts. So that one was significant. Number 7, how many field goal attempts will Mason Crosby have? You set the line at 3.5, and he had just 1. Is that correct? How many field goals?
Well, it would have to be because they had 38 points. So,
I have to look through my – Mike, again, is correct. 7.5, we asked, will Davante Adams have more touchdowns or drops? We both said more drops than touchdowns. He did have a touchdown.
He did.
Mike counts at least 2 drops for Adams, so we were correct. He had more drops than touchdowns. 7.75, will we see a Janis Jets sweep?
No.
We both said yes, and they did not run it.
They did pass to him once, though.
I think it's coming against Detroit.
You can't do it every week, you know, but the thing is you have the threat of it out there, so teams have to prepare for it. And so, you know, you run it once in a while, and you don't do it all the time, but you fake it and run other things off of it. That's where it becomes really valuable.
And the tiebreaker was did I catch all that? Tiebreaker was total yards by Ty Montgomery. You said 90. I said 75. Ooh. He had 40, according to Mike.
Yes.
And then we did a player of the game, which is kind of interesting. One of us said Cobb and one said Cook. I think you said Cook. I must have said Cobb. I think I was high on
either
Cobb.
Way, it's either way, it's bad.
Yeah, well, Cook was closer. A number of people had said Nelson.
Because he played, that makes it closer than
that's
Cobb.
Right. Did, including the winner this week is Richard Durain.
Hey!
It rains on the plane, Durain. He even picked Jordy Nelson as his player of the game.
Oh, so wow.
He was right on this game.
Richard.
Are you ready? So he is... he is alone in the casino hotel room by himself, so another single winner, which is good.
Are you... All the single winners. Okay. No, that's a different song. I'm sorry.
Are you ready for this week?
I suppose.
Were you ready or not? Here we go.
I have not had a good season, but okay, go on, please.
All right. So number one, how many, going back to the success that Jordy had, how many receiving yards will Jordy Nelson have this week?
Well, I don't think it'd be 154. I think Jordy will make an impact, but I don't think it will be as dramatic as this week. I'll put it at 86.
86. I'm going to take the over. I think he has another big game. Clay Matthews. How many total tackles would Clay Matthews have?
All right. But this is a tricky one because, as we saw, he can have a tremendous impact without having big tackle numbers. And it seemed like they were using him more on pass rushing downs, where he does make the bigger impact than on running downs, which is going to limit the number of tackles he makes. I think I only said 1.5 last week. I'm going to bump it up to 2.5.
2.5. All right, I'm going to take the over. And let's say, Mike, if you can include the half tackles, if I look at ESPN.com and they look at that chart there, there's total and solo are separate. Let's go with total tackles. That includes your half tackles, correct?
Yes, it does.
Does that change your number at all? Would you keep it at 2.5?
I am... if we're going to count those, so in other words, total tackles, whether they be solo or assisted, I'll go 3.5.
Then. All right, 3.5. All right, I'll take the over still. Okay. Number three. So Minnesota lit us up in the as far as how many offensive yards they had. I don't know what I guess I'd have to add it up. They had.
They got a fair amount in garbage time.
350 passing, 93 running. How many total yards will Detroit get against our defense?
Oh, man. Oh, and they're playing at home. Ford Field Packers don't play well there. I am actually expecting, and I'm going to be consistent because I said this was going to happen a month ago, that they were going to get to this point and lose. So I'm going to say that Detroit will have more yards than Minnesota.
Oh, man.
You want me to set the number? I'm going to say... 470.
470. All right, I'll take the under on that. But I think it's going to be a high-scoring game for sure. Number four, if the Packers win, they're going to have to get turnovers. How many turnovers will the Green Bay defense get?
Well, the thing about Matthew Stafford is he does throw a couple every game. You know, that should be, you know, catchable. And that's just – I mean, that's more of a part of his game. It's just kind of who he is. Did I mention he has a – beautiful wife. Have I mentioned that?
Yeah, a few times.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. I saw I mentioned it again. I'm going to say, is this that turnovers or is it just
interceptions, fumble recoveries?
Okay, so it's total
punts,
turnovers.
Yes, total turnovers.
Yep, 2.5.
Wow, 2.5.
Yep.
Well, I'll take the under on that one. Although I think they're going to need at least two to win this game. Aaron Rodgers, quarterback. Rating, he was up to 158 something at the first quarter,
and but then he cratered. He cratered, Dave, to 136.6.
20 points to 136. What do you think his quarterback rating will be this week?
I think he'll have a pretty good week statistically, but I think that the Lions' offense is it's going to be a high scoring game that the Lions win, in my opinion anyway. So I'm going to put Aaron Rodgers' passer rating. I'm going to put it at 107.
I'm going to take the over. I'm going back to this one because I like it. Will Davante Adams have more drops or touchdowns this week?
I think he's going to go with – have more drops. I think he'll have one touchdown and two drops is my opinion. So let's just go with that.
I'm going with drops too. Let's and I'll say if you can say a tie if you want. So you can either say drops – more drops, more touchdowns, or tie can be your answer. Okay. I'm going to put more drops like you. Number seven, one thing I thought was interesting is that the second leading receiver this week in yardage was Geronimo Allison.
Who is either a great Christian or he's like a porn star. I'm not sure which. Or maybe he's both.
He's a wide range. Yeah, that can happen. That can happen.
Yeah, sure.
Who do you think will be this, assuming Jordy is the number one receiver next week, who do you think will be second on the team in reception yardage?
Oh, yardage. Okay, not the number of receptions.
Number of yardage, yeah.
That's a different deal because the number of receptions, I think Ty Montgomery is going to have quite a few catches. But yardage, Cobb may play. I can eliminate Janice right away. Cook, that's an interesting one. I'm going to go with Davante Adams.
You're going to say Adams?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to go with Cobb. I think he. Oh man. No, I'm. Yeah, maybe this one's. I'll say Adams too. I guess that's probably.
Well, I don't want to influence you, but even if he plays, I don't.
Yeah.
Imagine he's going to be 100%.
I agree. I think Cook could be a contender. Oh, Ty Montgomery certainly could. Be up there, but I'll stay with Adams too. And then the tiebreaker number eight is we'll say total Detroit yards because I think that's an interesting number. You said 470. I'm going to say 435. But that's your tiebreaker is total yards for Detroit. Mike's going to have to do some math, which is okay. He's a smart guy. I should probably tell people how to play if they want to play again.
How do they play the betting lines?
They email Mike at Mitno Miller, which is MITNOMILLER at gmail.com.
All right, then. If you want to play along with us, Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, soon to be three locations throughout the great American West, we are offering the presidential suite, and that is at our Las Vegas location this week. We have had to do some deep cleaning at the Laughlin location. So we will be back at the Vegas location on the Strip, and that's what you get for winning. I believe Patrick was our man. He was able to navigate the TSA. I guess he had some issues crossing into the country to be able to stay at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino on his way from Ireland. I understand, though, he had a very pleasant time. So
yeah,
it's always our pleasure.
All right, we got a good email from our detective, Andy, Detective Monday. Did some investigation on Patrick.
I saw that. Why don't you recap that? I don't have it up on my screen here, but yeah. I understand that Detective Monday was on the beat.
He was. Apparently, Patrick had smuggled in a Shamrock Shake. During the month of March, and then
that's
it,
a major
so
offense.
Has a record. Yes, the United States. We can only get the Shamrock Shake in the month of March. Patrick, though, violated that and I guess has a history, but he still stayed at the casino. He was a fine guest. But yeah, our Detective Monday is on the case. This is an interesting development that we have, that we have our own private detective.
You know, we've got a lot of professionals, you know, who are a part of our medical team, of course, headed by Dr. Klaus. We now have an associate director of medicine, the West Coast branch, the Seattle branch. That's a very nice development. We have a couple of lawyers. We have international law. We have maritime law, admiralty. We are covered in lots of places. But one place, in fact, we even have a letter carrier in Norway that's
military,
in charge of all of
lots of military.
We have our military attaché, of course, our man who is he at the War College now? Is that where Captain Dave is? I think so. We even have a spy who works in the San Diego area, as I recall. His cover is something about agricultural stuff, but we know that's BS. but we don't have an in-house private dick, but I think Andy Monday, private investigator on the case. Glad to have you, Andy. Thank you.
But that's your betting line. So mitnomiller at gmail.com. If you also want to apply for a job, I feel like we could defend ourselves both legally and physically with the military. So we need other types. We need like we've got a representative at Apple's, but we don't seem to be getting much in terms of supplies there. But, you know, we could use a chef. We could probably use there's probably lots of professions that we don't have filled that we could – of a gardener,
I think a private chef would be outstanding.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of IT people. We've got, of course, John in Scotland taking care of our IT needs, and Chuck, of course, he hasn't sent you. I usually get a monthly shipment of Apple products from iChuck. Yeah,
he's to share them with me.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that. I didn't know why I needed a half a dozen Apple Watches, but now this makes a lot more sense to me, so that's good. And, of course, to keep us on the right side of things, we have Pastor Kevin Pastor Kevin was in touch with us this week, as he very often is, via Twitter. And we appreciate that. Also heard from Robert Hammond this week. Thank you, sir, for being in touch with us. Of course, Patrick checked in from the debauchery that is the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. Thank you, sir, for that. Of course, Mitno Miller in touch with us. He kind of has to be because his professional future is riding on it. Chad, now, Chad's a guy we got to have on again. Is there a better draft expert than Chad Reuter? I don't think so.
Maybe at the end of the season we can have him on as a pre-draft special.
I think we probably should.
And I'm going to ask him if he agrees with me that the Packers should draft a receiver, number one, and just lights out offense next year.
You know, Chad, I think, would be a good GM. You know, I mean, people are infatuated with Elliott Wolf. I think Chad Reuter's the guy who should be the next general manager.
Oh, man, if Chad was the next GM of the Packers and we had an inside scoop to it, this team would be golden, I tell you.
Well, I got to, if nothing else, one of the best guys ever, Chad Reuter, friend of the podcast, friend of Chris and Dave. So thank you for being in touch, my man. We definitely appreciate that. Also heard from the desert, from Gilbert, Arizona, from Gilbert, perhaps, Arizona, Michael Makowski, good, solid Wisconsin name. Mike was in touch with us to give us shit about the fact that we thought Randall Cobb and Adrian Peterson would be factors in the Vikings game, and neither one played. Hey, thanks, Mike, for pointing that out. We appreciate that. And I see that you're not able to watch a lot of games down in Arizona. Well, maybe if you were nicer to us, that wouldn't happen to you. That's all I'm saying, Mike. Kidding aside, thank you for being in touch from Gilbert, Arizona. I've been to that burg. Very nice place indeed. And Sue, who else? Well, you were in touch with me several times, I see, this week. Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. I don't know why. I suppose Merry Christmas.
Well, no, I think it was one of it. You wanted me to send some bail money, and I was able to do that on PayPal, which, by the way, I think our PayPal account is still up and operational.
It is.
And, you know, holiday shopping for a lot of people is done. You probably looked and said, boy, I've got a lot more money left in my bank account than I thought after buying for my friends and loved ones. And so if you go Packers Therapy at yahoo.com, that's how you can send us money if you love this podcast. In fact, even if you don't love this podcast, you should send us money anyway. Go to PayPal, Packers Therapy, yahoo.com, or you can just save it up. And then next year when we do this again, you can, you know, double what you were going to do this year, which is always welcomed, by the way.
That's right. That's right.
So you said you had something for pop culture, right?
The only thing I did this week – did you watch any Christmas specials?
No.
You don't do that each year? I watched the movie Love Actually. Now, have you?
Oh, God.
I was so going to ask you. Have you ever seen it?
You don't even have to ask.
You have not seen
it? No.
Then how do you know it's no good?
Well, because it's got Hugh Grant in it, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So then do I need to elaborate? You know?
He is an excellent prime minister. I think
well, that explains a lot about the situation in the UK these days, I guess.
Yeah, that's why they wanted to Brexit. That is my only really pop culture. Got lots of gifts. I got the new Star Wars book, Catalyst, which is a prequel to Rogue One. Yeah. I got lots of good gifts for Christmas, but I haven't been doing more visiting and shopping and different things, working actually, so I haven't done a lot of pop culture. Oops, excuse me, a lot of pop culture. Any for you?
The only thing I would mention, I think might be kind of fun for some people, and we do have some design artsy people who listen to this, people who, you know, in the music trade, for instance, is why we have the theme song that we do, and creative types. There is a website that I would recommend people check out, especially if you're in the creative professions, like our friend Hans in Madison, who, you know, is a very good friend and does some work for my university. And I will give the abbreviation of the website because it's – I don't know if we really want to say the actual name of the website, but it's GFDA, Good Freaking Design Advice, shall we say, is what the website is. And what it is a motivational – it's a motivational website, okay, is what it is for people – well – shall we say, here's what their motto is. Colorful, well-designed merchandise for people who give a fuck. That's what this website is about, GFDA. It is unvarnished design advice for people to get motivated, to get with it. I've got a couple of T-shirts from them. I've got a travel mug from them. My wife is a devotee of their motivational emails they send out, and also you can buy a lot of their merch. It's actually really good to kind of kick yourself in the butt and get yourself going. And also, I understand they have a 20% discount in the next 48 hours. The code BYE2016. Check it out. I don't have any personal stake in it, but it's funny and it is motivational. And I actually share some of these things with my team back at the office, and they get a good laugh. And it also reminds them, you know, you gotta kick it to make it happen. That is the bottom line, my friend. So GFDA.com is the place you go and check out good – well, it's good fucking design advice is what it is. So check that thing up, yeah.
I just looked it up. There are a lot of F words on that website.
There are.
Lots of them.
But what's really nice is the travel mug that I have is black. And you can either get the design advice on the mug in white, which makes quite a statement at a staff meeting.
Yeah.
Or you can get it in a much more subtle gray where people have to really look at it and it's not really an actionable cause for getting dismissed from your job.
Okay.
But it is a lot of fun, but the device is really good. It's basically stop procrastinating, stop making excuses. You know, you really have to make this happen if you're going to be successful. But they do it in fun and colorful ways, and they do like to drop a lot of F-bombs. But that's kind of the fun of the whole thing. So check that thing out. If nothing else, it'll give you a good laugh.
Good deal.
A couple more people I wanted to recognize. I had forgotten that our guy, Chief Tom, was in touch with us from his posting in the Far East. Thank you, Chief Tom, for that. Rob Gardner also sending us a couple of messages this week. So I didn't want to forget those guys either along the way. They hit us at Twitter at Packers Therapy, and that's how you get us at Twitter. And also, if you want to send us an email and you don't want to give us money through PayPal, it's the same email address, which I'll mention again, packerstherapy@yahoo.com. You can email that to us, or you can actually send us money using that same email address. So, Dave, any final thoughts as we head into what will be a short week for the Lions? They're playing tonight on Monday night. Packers played on Saturday, so they'll have a little extra time for preparing and for recovering, which may be somewhat of an advantage as we look ahead to what is, without a doubt, the most pivotal game of the Packers season. Any thoughts?
Well, just I predict a win.
Oh.
And
so what kind of game are you looking for? I mean, what kind of score? What kind of game do you think people should expect on Sunday night?
I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it's going to be a lot of back and forth. I think our best bet is if we can, kind of like with Minnesota, we give up field goals and we score touchdowns. I think that's going to be our best bet. But I think Detroit's going to score and it'd be a little bit more of an offensive challenge for the Packers than Minnesota, certainly. But I think the Packers' offense are on a roll. So I think it's going to be Packers win by 4, but it's a very tight game. I think it's kind of a tie going to the fourth quarter kind of situation. I think the Packers win.
I'm seeing a high-scoring game. Packers come out on the wrong end of it, but like a 38-31 kind of game.
All right. Well, that's let me write that down so we can verify. I said – you say 38-31.
Lions. Mm-hmm.
Lions. And I'm going to say – I'm going to say 35 to – I guess 31 if I got to keep my points.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So Packers. All right. We got our predictions down.
One other thing, like Packers, you know, can lose and make the postseason. So I am going to say that they'll lose the game but still make the postseason.
Oh, very, very good. All right. We'll see if our predictions are right.
All right. So Packers Therapy is going to be watching. I imagine you will be watching too.
I will.
Packers play, 7:30, I believe, is the kick time Sunday night at Ford Field in Detroit. Dave and I have made a commitment to watch the game, and we'll do a podcast next week, too.
Sounds good.
But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.